Hello. It's good to see you all tonight. We're so glad to have you here. It looks so good to see everyone in one room. It's just so much fun. And so we're going to have a good time tonight. Now, you probably looked at the title and thought, ugh, that sounds really fun and exciting. We're talking about parenting in difficult situations. One thing that we found, and I know you all are seeing this as well, as the vast majority of people since Hurricane Harvey have kind of moved on to normalcy. They've moved on to other things in their lives. There still are some folks, and some of you I know even in this room, that are still working through dealing with your own home being flooded. And we know that that's had an impact on families. But we also know that families have issues all the time. We're always dealing with kids who are going through something or about to go through something. And as the ones who are on the front lines with these kids, we want you to be equipped and to be ready to minister to them and to be able to minister to their families as well. And so we've asked Dr. Michael Smalley to be with us tonight. And I think you're going to enjoy him, which is my way of saying you're going to enjoy him. I'm just telling you right now. And so let me tell you some things about Michael. Michael was found as a small child in the forest of Poland. He was raised by local circus performers. That's the part I'm not supposed to say. I'm not supposed to let you know that. Okay, forget all that. You don't know that. Okay, here's the other part. Michael Smalley specializes in teaching people the principles of loving well and loving for a lifetime. That sounds a whole lot better, I gotta say. Okay, he is known for his hysterical stories and straightforward, no nonsense advice. Michael's message inspires, motivates, and challenges. You're gonna see that tonight. His love story with his wife Amy began as he was an undergraduate at a place called Baylor. Okay, I hear you. I think there was some other things mixed in there, but yeah, I hear you. After graduation, Michael went on. It's an interesting group, my God. I just got to, you know, it's 8:20 at night on Friday night. So, after graduation, Michael went on to earn a master's degree in clinical psychology from Wheaton College, i.e., he is a smarty pants, and a PhD at Barnum Theological Seminary. He is the founder, along with his wife Amy, of the Smalley Institute. Michael and his family live in Magnolia, Texas. That's right, just up the road. It only took him a couple hours to get here from Magnolia. And he has three children, and they're over here. They are Cole, Reagan, and is David in the room? David, who's out at the table. So his son David is here with him tonight. I'm very excited to have Michael here with us tonight, so I'm not going to say anything else. I'm going to turn over to him, Dr. Michael Smalley.
Thank you. All right. Well, I can highlight a few of the things that Doug missed on my bio. I have been awarded People Magazine's Sexiest Man of the Year 11 years running. No, I have. That's a true story. I just turn it down every year to their shock and dismay because, I mean, truthfully, it's very difficult to be a sex symbol. You know, the hardest part is just the gawking that goes on. The women, like ladies, my eyes are up here. So, this right here is for my wife. So, you just leave that alone. I guess you had the clean comic earlier. I am not that man. So I have grown up a Christian. How many of you are like me? Grew up like you don't really even know when you accepted Jesus or prayed the prayer, went forward. So I've never really known life outside of the church. But I grew up kind of like on more on the West, so in Arizona, and my parents were both from Southern California. So honestly, I didn't know how many rules there were to Christianity until I went to Baylor University. And I met Baptists for the first time in my life. And they had so many rules, things that are appropriate or not appropriate. And I'm still trying to get those down. So thank you for being here. I've told Doug and the entire staff that I'd like to think you all came here to see me tonight. Yeah, obviously that's not true. Making that feel very uncomfortable. So I know you have to be here, so I'll try to make this as painless and enjoyable as possible. I don't know who has like a, well, I guess I wrote it down. Someone came up with four talking points for me. Doug is like throwing everybody under the bus. So I'm like, who put this outline? I'm not even aware of this outline. And he's like, maybe Don Mutton did it. I feel like Don is an easy target. I've known Don all my life. And he is an easy target. If anything goes wrong, Don's going down, isn't he? He even tried to blame the youth guy over there leaning all cool up against the wall. With his untucked shirt and his Metro three-quarter sleeve jacket. And the finely trimmed beard. Oh, and lest we forget the spiky hair. He didn't even do anything mean to me tonight. He's been nothing but kind. And I'm going to kill you. And you know why? Because I have some insecurities. You're a very handsome man with your beard, and I have... I don't even know what this is. Let's do a vote. My wife will love this. I did not plan on doing this, but who... And you can be honest. I want you to be honest. This is a safe place. But how many of you like the beard? All right. I was kidding when I said he was attractive, buddy. I was just... How many of you really are like, seriously... It's like a cross between a raccoon and a rabid squirrel. You need to shave it. Who thinks I need to shave it? I got a few apprehensive. And then those who didn't vote are sinners. So, we're in a chapel. I'm getting some very unapproving looks right now. Some of you are not going to like me. So... But I don't mean to do this on purpose. So if I do offend you tonight, Doug's email is doug.bischoff@... Is that even right? Is it? It is! It totally... I don't know how I figure that out. So here's the outline I will not follow tonight. It's in your workbook. Highlighted right under my biography. Oh, and let me just thank your editorial team for my biography. This is going to be a very awkward moment. So how many of you have heard of my father, Dr. Gary Smalley? Awesome. So he, you know, super famous marriage guy, had the infomercial, was always on television. And to spare any incredibly awkward moments after tonight... He did graduate to heaven on March 6th, 2016. So it is unique having a famous father, and a lot of people don't know that he has graduated to heaven. So that's super exciting after you're done speaking. They go, oh, I love your dad. What's he up to? Which I'm a very inappropriate person, and and I treasure dark humor, like really, you know, things where you're like, that was inappropriate. That's where I live. That's my point. So, yeah, just to spare myself developing a horrible reputation, I like to start with that. Not to be morbid, but I'm also very comfortable. I also do comedy, by the way. Shocker. I am the most educated comedian in the world. And... I started a new comedy routine over this past summer on my father's graduation, on his death. I know. I told you, I like that dark stuff. So I won't do that tonight, because I'm pretty sure it wouldn't play that great here. It goes great in a bar where everyone's drunk. I'm kidding, I've never done that. So tonight, we will not be speaking about understand the primary needs of children and the parent in difficult seasons. learn a compelling strategy. I was like, compelling? For parents to lead their children through tough circumstances. Yeah, we'll get that done in 45 minutes. Leverage your life Bible study role as a kids specialist. So you're all being certified this evening. And then, but last but not least, learn how to organize the various hurts, confusion, and misunderstandings that arise in hard times. And the Middle Eastern peace process. No, actually, we will get into this, because believe it or not, I can't talk about that, thank the Lord, because I did not even discover this outline until tonight. So, you all volunteer and lead kids from like 18 down to babies. Who did that? Babies. I know exactly the reference. I'll finish it. I want my baby back, ribs. Who said it? I'm calling you out. Was it you? Am I right? This is totally next gen. Wow, that's amazing. She looks mortified. Everyone knows your little secret now. So tonight we are going to talk about, how do you as a leader, so is it like, I'm just trying to understand who you are, so I cater this to be most helpful for you. So I'm assuming there's small group leaders, there's like class leaders, am I hitting it? I don't know, she's like giving me a horrible look. Yeah, in the orange. That look was like, this guy is an idiot. I am trying to be loving, and she's, how old are you? Yeah. Yeah, 20. We know everything at 20. I was so smart, I got married at 21. That was a great move. I didn't suffer at all. So what else is there? What is it? It's small group leaders, Sunday school classes, and you don't even have anything? Oh. Okay. So you also then meet with, so you probably have kid leaders, like especially in high school, junior high, other stuff. That's very cool. Well, you guys are awesome, because I've been there, done that, been a youth pastor, a small group leader for my oldest son, Cole, for like him and five other guys for almost 5 years. Before that, when we were living in Branson, Missouri, we had five young ladies that we had for like 7 years. So I know how stressful that can be. And by the way, I love that term. It was a kid specialist. That I made fun of it earlier, and I regret that now. Because honestly, that's what you are. So I wanted to start off by encouraging you. A lot of times, I've pastored churches, I've planted churches, I've been a senior pastor and marriage pastor. I've kind of done it all in the church world for many, many moons. And one of the things that I feel is sad is that, you know, as a church leader, I feel my ministry and one of my primary goals is to make disciples of Christ. Well, if you're going to be a disciple of Christ, that means you're pouring into other people, but in intimate settings, right? Like small groups and not large mass audiences like this. I mean, these things can be great for certain things. You know, on Sunday morning can be super cool, but the real ministry happens in the kind of activities y'all are doing. And one of the things that makes me sad is many times people like you feel overly insecure about being like a kid specialist, right? Because you're thinking, well, I didn't go to school, I didn't get a master's, I don't have a graduate degree or a certificate or anything like that, and therefore, relax, okay? Because you are kid specialists. That's a wonderful term. This is what you do. And many of you, it's probably your job. How many of you are volunteers? So the majority of you are volunteers. How many of you are like on staff-ish? Yeah, all the ones standing in the back. Aw, servant leaders. And so I want to start off by saying, look, you're doing something repetitively. You are gaining experience, which, by the way, is infinitely more valuable than classroom time. And I don't want to belittle classroom time, because there's value in that community and the things you're forced to read and forced to talk about that you would never out in the real world. And there's certainly value to that, but you cannot dismiss the experience that you're doing this. And like, how many of you have done this 5 years or more? Wow, that's amazing. That's a degree, just so you know. More than a degree, honestly. How about 10 years? What? Looks like the exact same amount of hands. 20. That'd be, no. Okay, for real, are you just messing with me? 20? 20, 30? What? That is amazing. Sheesh. I think 30 years, you've earned multiple PhDs. 30 plus, okay, 40? No way. Are you lying, sir? Be truthful. Wow. Wait, how long? 40 years. Wow. That's incredible. Wait, all here at Houston Vert? Okay. Wow. That's amazing. And as like a layperson, not like on staff or on staff. That isn't, well, you win. I'm going to give you something. Yeah, let's clap. I'm going to give you two things. Did you hear that? I'm trying to be gracious, and he's giving me this look like, no, you don't have to, because you don't want to hassle carrying my stuff. I take it all back. You're a horrible human being. And I will give this to you later. And by way of hitting you with it. Yes. No. I would have. That's what you get to do after 40 years, by the way. The guy teaching tries to give you something, you can say no. That's not hurtful at all. He's like, I've heard you talk. I'm not interested. So genuinely, your experience in doing this thing week after week, month after month, year after year is meaningful, and you really are a kid specialist. Now, legally, do not, you know, call yourself a child therapist or a licensed clinical. Then you do get arrested. But you are experts. And if you think that lay people who have a ton of experience like all of you do aren't really that big of a deal, in the marriage world, which is where I've lived for 23 years, they did a pretty big study. And it's funny because when I went through graduate school, it was painful because the process of marriage therapy felt completely counterintuitive to what I would believe that would actually be helpful. And so I really spent a great deal of my time arguing because they have so many rigid boundaries, and you know, you're having discussions that, you know, if you see a client in the grocery store, you cannot make contact and you need to leave immediately because you will lose your licensure if you talk to them in public. And I'm like, what? Because I'm really just a pastor at heart and I never liked it. And this study that they've done multiple studies where they compare the effectiveness of clinical licensed marriage therapists and marriage lay people. So like marriage mentors and people just like you, right? Who just lead the class, do the small group, whatever. And the marriage educators or the lay people significantly higher success rates in helping couples in crisis. Like, it's not even a competition. Okay, so that's real. And you do make differences, and you are becoming experts. And tonight will hopefully just add maybe a few more things to your tool belt. And speaking of tool belts, if you don't know, you know, I, as much as I wish I was God's gift to mankind in knowledge and power, I'm not. And so the things I teach might be a tinge unique, right? There's nothing new under the sun, as Ecclesiastes teaches us. But what I genuinely believe is important is that God gives every one of you specific passions that you need to run with. So, for example, mine, like if I'm ever somewhere and someone doesn't try to control and dictate exactly what I'm going to talk about with four key points that I'm supposed to hit, I'm always going to hit personal responsibility. That is just that thing that God has burning inside of me. But personal responsibility isn't the only thing that helps people, right? Forgiveness might be your thing, or validating others, or you know, serving, or you know, whatever, kindness, peace, communication, I don't know. But what's important is that who you are and the passions God puts on your heart, man, use those. But just learn some tricks and tools of the trade that you can put in your little toolkit of helping these kids. And so there might be something that stands out to you that I talk about tonight. Stuff that in there. I know it's not going to be the only thing, and it shouldn't be. You should have a wide variety of resources and things that you've learned over the years that you can kind of put together and use very effectively, because they're things that you're going to really believe in. Hear, hear? I felt kind of fun. Never done that. So here's where we're going to start tonight, because, you know, we're talking about, you know, the notes are talking about disasters, but really, and Doug, I thought you were like dead on. Yes, we had Hurricane Harvey. I live here too. And that is stressful, and it's a disaster. But we also have just relational disasters, right? So there's divorces, there's deaths in the family. There's all sorts of stuff that goes on constantly for families. You know, it unfortunately, most of us fail to recognize that, you know, like that book in the Bible called Genesis, it's at the beginning. And, you know, God talks about that when sin entered the world, what happened? We became cursed. Ergo, things aren't going to go well all the time, right? Because of sin. I love it, especially with young Christian people who believe. How many of you are single? I hope you're good. And so I'm married, so it is easy. See, I got a black wedding ring. Silicone, super flexible. Because I've lost all the expensive ones. Yeah. So, one of the things that irritates me with Christian singles is, and I actually used to believe the same thing, that like God has that special person for me, right? There's that soulmate out there. There's the right one that, you know, now today's world, it's compatibility, which is wonderful. I am not mocking compatibility. When I was dating, it was opposites attract. That was just dumb. Okay, that is absolutely a formula for divorce. So compatibility is way better. So millennials, keep with it. If you still believe in the institution of marriage, I should say. And so, and it's like this common Christian thing that, you know, there's that one special person. And I need to find that special person. And when I have those special feelings, I must be with that special person. Who's married? Because you're smirking. I already see it. Right? Because you kind of feel that way, or at least hopefully you do during your dating years and engagement time. And my bliss lasted 18 hours. Yeah, that's the truth. 18 hours into my married life, we weren't speaking to each other. Seriously. And we have the love stories of love stories, and I do not even remotely have enough time to go into it. because I can't help it. Once I start, it's like I'm giving you all the details. And so, but we have this like miracle story. She was engaged to another man. I was the first person she showed her engagement ring to. And who are my bailer? Like, there was a lot of hissing going on. I don't even know what that's about. So, Baylor, so you know, at Baylor University, I was a yell leader. For those of you who didn't go to Baylor, that would be a male cheerleader. And so I had become a male cheerleader just to meet her. That's how shy I was. I was like, well, obviously I can't just go up and ask her out on a date. I'll become a male cheerleader. So that was brilliant. And really, since I'd never spoken to her and I practiced for a year to make the squad the following year, it was more like stalking than really pursuing, or maybe aggressive pursuing. But, you know, I went really out of my way to get this girl to notice me. And then, you know, lo and behold, 4 months on this team, she shows me her wedding ring. She got engaged in Dallas. And, I mean, one disaster after another. The fiance ended up having an unfortunate accident. Someone had pushed him off of a building. That's a warning for you, sir, for rejecting. Because I've done stuff. They still can't find. Yeah, there's no film of that. No, I'm kidding. He did not have an unfortunate accident. But, you know, one thing led to another, and she ended the engagement in June of 1994, and we started dating in July of 1994, and we got in, yeah. I can't even. You'll have to bring me back, and I'll give you the whole love story, because it is bizarre. We got engaged September 30th, and we got married December 17th, 2 weeks after she was supposed to marry the other guy. I know. No one had that reaction when we got married. They were like, go for it. So 18 hours into my married life, we weren't speaking. I was totally shut down and hurt. And I'm an avoider. She's an escalator. So she likes to yell and scream and make a tremendous amount of noise. And you don't know when my feelings are hurt. I just, well, you know, because I haven't spoken to you or seen you in days. It was so bad, we left our honeymoon early. We were on a 7-day Southern Caribbean cruise. We left a cruise early. It was a long swim back to harbor. So I had to get special permission from the, like, ship captain. And, I mean, it was a total disaster. If I hadn't been Gary Smalley's son, I would have probably tried to annul it. She was equally unhappy, and it was a complete and utter mess for the first 6 months. It was so bad that 3 months into it, we got into such a horrible fight. And this is the disasters I'm talking about, because this is a disaster. I mean, I'll never forget this. It was this horrible fight. I can't even give you the details of the fight, but I was devastated, and I went running out of this log cabin we were living in Branson, Missouri, in the woods. We really were. And I just was bawling. I was so miserable. And I could not think of how to get out of this marriage, right? Because the Bible says don't divorce. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And so I ran out at like 2, 3 in the morning, ran down the road, and then laid out in the middle of the road and waited for a car to come and run me over. I know. That's pretty serious, though. You laugh. I'm talking about attempted suicide. Now you feel guilty. They're like, you made it uncomfortable. So now, full disclosure, it was a semi-private road in the middle of nowhere. So it was a pretty weak attempt. But I can remember the tree. I was laying, like, you know, perpendicular, right out in the middle of the road. There was this big tree by the side of it, and it stands out because there's no other trees around. And I just waited for an hour or two, and just, I wanted out. I was that miserable. And then 6 months in, I was already in graduate school for psychology, marriage and family therapy in particular, which made it really miserable every day at class. I went to this weekend training thing for therapists and pastors and stuff by Drs. Howard Marker and Scott Stanley, who are out of the University of Denver. But they were kind of unveiling their 25-year longitudinal study on what causes divorce. And so I went out with my dad and my brother, and it was at the Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego, so that was like an awesome, beautiful location. And then that is where things turned around, because for the first time in my life, I had been educated to what was broken, why we were so miserable. Until this point, even having a world-famous marriage expert as a father, we didn't know why we weren't getting along. We didn't know why we were so miserable. And in 3 days, I figured that out, and it totally changed. We did a 180. Now, 23 years of marriage, we've hit the pit again, and then we crawl back out. Then you have children, and you fall in the pit, and then they throw dirt on top of you. And we're like trying to crawl out of that. So it doesn't mean just because we learn things. What it really means is that there's certain things you need to understand on how to respond when things go bad. So how do you respond to natural disasters like Harvey? How do you respond to divorce? How do you respond to death? How do you respond to these different things? And so how we react, or how we even repair the disasters that happen in our life, really matters. So to fully understand that, we have entered the classroom. So excited to see this thing, because I did not bring slides. And I could have, but Doug didn't tell me I could. Here's what's funny. I won't get into that. So it's about me, though, and I don't mind throwing myself under the bus, but we don't have enough time. So here's what's really, really important. In any situation, if someone is reacting negatively, and you know what I mean by negative? I love that. Right? It's bad. It's not good. They're super angry, super shut down, whatever. And these are kids. Like, you know what's sad about boys, little boys, especially younger boys, is that when younger boys are really, really acting out and are physically aggressive, it typically means they're depressed. But most teachers and helpers and people don't understand that. And they just look at this kid and go, he's rebellious, he needs to be punished. But what he's really doing, because boys process depression differently. Okay, where little girls might get very sad and kind of more normal, like an adult would, boys can get very hyper and can act out. And so we keep punishing them when really we need to go, is everything okay? So the question is, why do people get upset? So I don't know. No, I'll keep it with me. I was going to ask for a volunteer, but I doubt you'd be willing to go this bare in front of all these people. So, wow. Well, if you volunteer, you're definitely not coming up here. Because that just terrified me. No. No. It'll be quicker if I do mine. So, well, all right. I said, here's a perfect one. I said that 18 hours into my marriage, we weren't speaking to each other. So I had shut down, and as I shut down, what do you think my wife started to do? She, I had never, I was 21 years old, I had never been yelled at in a personal relationship in my entire life until I got married. I did not know people yelled at each other. My whole family is avoidant. And so not healthy. We're just all avoiders. So we would just rather keep the peace and stuff the emotions and kill you later. So I genuinely did not know people yelled at each other. Anybody like me grow up in a home like that? Yeah. So you're like, what? And how many of you are like me and you married someone who was raised in the exact opposite home? So that was my wife's family system, is like, let's yell this out. And what's crazy is for her, yelling meant you cared. Now, listen, it's dysfunctional. It's not healthy. But if you're Italian, you get a pass. Really, if you have any cool ethnic, so Italian, Hispanic, Brazilian, a Latin lover. So it's like white people, we don't get any fun. You look at us and you're like, oh, I got to do my taxes. So, so here's the question. Why did I shut down? Do you want to know the circumstances? I'll give you the facts because people love facts. So we're about to land in San Juan, Puerto Rico, which is our port of whatever for a cruise. And I'm going through the guidebook and I'm super excited. Now, what you need to understand is for our honeymoon, I did not want to go anywhere that she had traveled before with the other fiance. That's fair, right? It's not even weird. They had been together 4.5 years and had traveled with his family. And so, I mean, that was like, so I showed her all the islands that we'd go to on this cruise, and it was very important. I was just a little insecure about that relationship because we'd been together, 4 months. They'd been together 4 years. And so I showed her all the islands. She's like, nope, we're good. I did not show her and did not know, it wasn't on the pamphlet or whatever, that it was out of Puerto Rico. So she did not find out about that until I had already booked it. So she was like, oh, what do I do? Well, my wife has this horrible thing about being honest. I mean, really. I have told my wife multiple times over the course of 23 years, I give you permission to lie to me. I mean, she is like, I'm like, I never needed to know that. And so it wasn't an option for her to just tough stuff that one away. She knew I got to get it out. So she chooses as we're landing. I'm going, ooh, we could go here. And she goes, ooh, yeah, that was really fun. And you got to understand, she had never traveled anywhere with her family out of the state of Texas. So I knew immediately what that meant. I went, what? And she knew immediately, maybe that wasn't the best timing. And I go, are you kidding? You've been here with him? She's like, no. And I'm like, no? Then how did you know it was fun? Yes, I came with him. We never referred to, you know, his real name because I didn't like it. And we always called him Satan. So I felt like it fit. So I'm like, were you here with Satan? She's like, yes. Boom. Immediately I shut down. Won't talk to her. Okay, bad. Like, we're getting off the plane. She tried. She's like, I think maybe we should just, like, put this on hold and maybe we can meet with a counselor when we get back. And I would have none of that. None of that healthy crap. And so, am I allowed to say that? That's one of those rules, isn't it? Sorry. So, why, you now know the facts, why did I get upset? Hurt, jealous? Actually, pretty good. You guys are healthy. Yes, sir? I lost control. Anybody else? Wow. I'm like genuinely impressed. Powerless. Dang, man. I've never had an audience ever do this correctly, and you are. Your hand is raised. Go ahead. That was already said. And it's not even deep enough. Man, you got powerless, insecure. There was a good one over here. Jealous. Dang. Now you're going to bring up some other author's marriage book? I was just starting to like you people. You and him are out. Security. So, well, let me think. I would say, now I could do all of those, but I would probably say I felt deceived, right? Lied to. And what? Someone just yelled one? Did you say betrayed? Who did that? Is that orange sweater? Oh, I wasn't even close. Who was that? Wow, I'm like looking this way. That was awesome. That was genuine what I was about to write. And betrayed. Now, it could have been powerless. It could have been insecure. And by the way, some of those, that was in there. But just for time's sake, and also not writing 15 different possible feeling words up there, I tend to, with people and kids, keep it between 1 and 4. All right, because you, again, I could use all the ones that you, a lot of the ones that you mentioned. But here is why people behave badly. It is because what we call them, and I'm sorry if you can't see, what we call those things, feeling deceived and feeling, but those are feelings. We call them buttons. Right? Have you ever heard the phrase, oh, that totally pushes my... Well, have you ever asked, well, what are buttons? These are the buttons. Buttons are just feeling words. Powerless, insecure, insignificant, rejected. The majority of men, their primary buttons, and this would, a lot of boys are going to fit under this category. They're going to be, they'll be feeling like a failure or feeling controlled. That's like the vast majority. I've surveyed hundreds of thousands of people. And those are the two primary buttons that men tend to relate to. So if you have a guy, a parent, or a boy that's melting down, it could be because he's feeling like a failure. My son, my oldest, Cole, when he was 6 years old, playing some video game, comes stomping down the stairs. And at that home, my office was like under the stairs. So it was like, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, what in the world? I came out 6 years old. I came out, and he is sobbing uncontrollably, where I thought, you know, one of his siblings is dead. I mean, it was like, what? I go, son, what happened? And he goes on this tirade about how he can't beat the game. It was a video game. Now, what do most parents, teachers, small group leaders, what are they going to say? Oh, come on. It's a... Ah, now, you're right. To be sobbing over a video game is pretty pathetic. Totally right. Man, though, if you're really feeling like an epic failure, does that feel quite as insignificant? It's not about the stupid video game. That's a circumstance. Circumstances are very shallow. But what most of you do is you spend your life focused on those facts or circumstances. I'm mad because of the flood. You're not mad because of the flood. You're not depressed because of the flood. The flood is just an event. It could be anything. What's deeper, if you're struggling and having a negative reaction to the flood or to the divorce or to the death or to the major disaster, what's really happening is there's a button getting pushed. Your job is to figure out which button. And the way you get there is asking a succession of questions that have one word in it. Why? Thank you. That's a good kid there. How old is that kid? I like him. Her. Can't see. So it's you got to ask. So I'm freaking out over the flood. Well, how come, honey? What scares you most about it? You know, they might go a little bit deeper, right? They might go, well, it's nothing. Okay. Well, why does the flood scare you? Because I don't know what's going to happen. Ooh, we're getting closer. And why does not knowing what's going to happen scare you? Because I feel what? Danger. I feel powerless. I feel out of control. I feel there's going to be a button. And the thing is that it's going to be unique kind of to everybody, right? There's usually some patterns. Right? The majority of women, for example, tend to circle their primary buttons as feeling rejected or disconnected. And isn't that interesting how closely men and women's buttons fit the curse? Because what's a part of the curse? Men are going to have to go out into the what? The fields and toil. And it's going to be hard labor. Right? So it's what we do. That's where our focus is, which is a part of the fall, by the way. And so, of course, failure is a major thing for men. Or feeling controlled. And women tend to be, right, more on the emotional side on average. And who knew? Their buttons are rejected and disconnected, which are both highly relational. Okay? So I got upset and shut down because the buttons of deceived and betrayed got pushed. For you, it may have been different. So this is a thing that we call the conflict dance. And by the way, this is a universal pattern for every relationship and every single culture on the planet. Conflict dance. Dance. Because it is a miserable dance. And I say that very confidently because I have taught this exact same thing in Africa, India, Asia, Central America, Europe, everywhere, except Australia. But I'm pretty sure that'll be the same. So I was in Malawi, the poorest country in Africa at the time at least, and had 80 couples. We were meeting outside. The women were topless. That was a very unique day for me. And no one prepared me for that. And so I came out of the hut. I'm like, hey, yo. I'm like, and they were laughing. They thought it was so funny that that was a big deal. I'm like, I don't know what to look, where to go. And they're like, it's all great. And they started dancing and laughing. And I'm like, this is horrible. So I took my clothes off and everything was good. I did not do that. I wouldn't do that to anyone. So, even in Malawi, as I had actually a whiteboard very similar to this, on a dirt floor under a thatched big roof, I explained this cycle. Okay, so this, if your kids are getting upset in your group, in your class, if it's with a co-leader, if it's in your own home, I promise you this is what's happening. Something has happened, an event. For me, what was it? I found out, right? The old fiancé. Satan. And so, wow, it's already 9:08. This is all you're going to get tonight. And so an event occurs. Could be anything. Right? Divorce, flooding, fire, death, whatever. If it is a bad reaction, you know a button has been pushed every time. It's a rule of some science, physics or something. Or for every action, there's an opposite and equal. Yeah, I don't even know if that fits. But, do what? Yes. Here's what I heard, because I don't have good hearing. Ben Surlatata. And I already asked you once, and I'm like, I'm not going to get it. Oh, yes, a law of emotion. Gunther's. Gunther's law of emotion. Oh, yeah, Newton's law of something. Is that it? Definitely not Gunther. So when a button gets pushed, there will always be a reaction. Are you hearing me? Every single time. If it's bad, it's a negative reaction. So what did I do? I avoided, right, or shut down. This is one of the reactions that leads to a broken, disconnected relationship and total chaos. It is unhealthy. It is not smart. This is one of the things they found in that 25-year study that leads to divorce. But what's insane is that this applies to all relationships. I did a huge corporate training for a big oil company in town and met with the big group of their senior leaders, did the same thing, because they were all, it was like total chaos. And they asked me to come for a day and just observe. And I had not done that really. And I thought, okay, because they were paying. I'm like, I'm poor, so that's a good idea. And so I can't even give my books away. And so, man, if every one of those books isn't sold after you leave tonight, I'm going to be really poor. And so they asked me to observe. At first, I was like, because I believe this is a universal pattern, but it's always scary because it was a new environment. Man, I watched these guys and ladies, like it was chaos this entire day and conflict. And it was this. It was all the exact same pattern. So if you respond negatively, and there's only four ways that you can respond negatively. One of them is if you avoid. I'll give you all four. It will 100% of the time push a button in the other person. Every single time. So you got to draw another arrow. So this is, you know, this is me up here. So now I've shut down. And this is my wife. I'm not speaking to her. I wouldn't help her with her luggage. I really wouldn't. She had like seven pieces. I was like, forget you. You lied to me. I feel deceived and betrayed. I want to make you get your own luggage, which is so immature. So she's like hurting and suffering, and she's feeling what? Because I won't talk to her. Ah, which guess what? My wife's biggest button of all. Oh, let me tell you. If you make her feel rejected, that's her thing. That is very difficult for her to respond well if that button of rejection is getting pushed. So I've now pushed her button. What does that mean? There's going to be a reaction. And what did you learn? What is my wife going to do? Oh, let me tell you. She chooses to escalate. Uh-oh. That is the second negative reaction that leads to a broken relationship of any kind. Right? So what I do with my kids is they know these rules. And so growing up in my home, unfortunately, I would label it. So my two boys shut down. So when they shut down, I call the timeout and go, ooh. Dudes, it is not cool. We are not allowed to shut down. If you need a timeout, like to a break and to calm down, but when are you going to come back and discuss this with your brother, sister, me, your mother, whoever? Right? I would label that. My daughter is like my wife. I go, ooh, you're allowed to be hurt and offended. You aren't allowed to escalate and scream. And let me tell that chick, she can scream. It's kind of terrifying. She one time, she was that strong-willed child, and you'll have these in your class. By the way, just know, if you haven't figured this out already, strong-willed children grow up to be the greatest people on the planet. They really do. That is like, did you have one? I mean, Reagan is 19. She was 2 years old. My wife and I were, this is the honest truth, we were holding each other on our couch in Chicago, Illinois, and I said out loud, she will end up in prison one day. I had to make a sign because she was such a cute little thing. Everyone always wanted to touch her and pick her up. I had to constantly protect people's lives because she would bite you. If she didn't know you, which was like, really, if it wasn't me and Amy sometimes, you're getting bit if you try to touch this chick. And how humiliating is that when you're like a marriage and family expert? And they're like, oh, look at your dog. I'm like, don't touch. She bites. One time, like, she would never go to bed. And you know, Christmas is always that night, right? Christmas Eve. That's like the one night you get with a strong-willed kid to go, honey. And I had her. She's screaming her head off and kicking. And she was like two or three. And I plop her in bed. I go, Reagan, it's Christmas Eve. If you don't go to bed, Santa won't come. And don't judge me. I know that could be a rule too. I like creative fantasies. So Santa won't come. My daughter looked up at me and stopped. I went, ooh, but it wasn't a good stop. It was like a, it's like something you'd see in the face of a sociopath. And she looked at me and she goes, she's 3 years old and highly verbal. She goes, I don't care. And I go, what do you mean? You wouldn't get any presents. She goes, I don't want presents. I don't care about Santa. I don't care about Papa. That was my father. I will never close my eyes. And then, like, if you ever saw The Exorcist in the head, I was waiting for it. I was like, what in the world? All I can say, if they're a strong-willed child of your own or in your class, just have patience. Yeah, they'll break one day. And to encourage you, hey, some kids, they will be disciplined 14,342,716 times. It doesn't mean it's not working. I'm just telling you, the moment that you quit as a parent or a teacher or a leader or a kid specialist, the moment you quit is when you lose with that kid, even with the most oppositionally defiant kids. I had an oppositionally defiant kid clinically court-ordered at 9. Who gets court-ordered at 9? This kid bit me on the inner thigh. Oh, can't even talk about how that happened. It's traumatizing. I mean, hard. I bled. Punched me. And I obviously would say that's not okay. And he would have consequences, appropriate consequences. I met with that kid for 9 months. And every single time he lashed out and bit me and kicked me and punched me and cussed me out, I would say, I'm so sorry. I know how much you're hurting. His parents were evil. And it really doesn't matter what you do or say to me. I will love you no matter what. That's the theme. And after 9 months, he eventually moved, but it had gotten semi-better, right? By the end, I wasn't getting bit. And it was like 2 years later, at like 11, I got a letter from this kid. And so you never know the impact you're making. But when you love these kids unconditionally, your own or the ones you're working with, that's what changes people. Ephesians 5, right, the super famous one on marriage, do you know what that's about? Right? Remember the whole, like, wives, mend your husbands, and people get all distracted with that. And then they lose the part when it says, and husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. He laid down his life for her. So basically, Christ's model for changing people is loving them unconditionally like he loved you. So how many of you believe in Jesus? And how many of you would say that that relationship changed you for the better? All right. And what did Jesus do to cause such great change in your life? Did he shame you? Did he publicly criticize you? The comedian brought it up earlier. Did he spank you? Huh, what did he do? He died for you. That's the model, folks, for change. I'm telling you, it is being like Christ and unconditionally loving others. That's what promotes the kind of change worth having. So she reacts negatively, which means what? If you react in one of those four negative ways, what always happens? You're going to push a button in the other person. So now she's escalated. Oh, that's weird. I already felt deceived and betrayed. Now she's screaming at me. What do I feel? Judged, condemned, more betrayed. Because I've never been yelled at in my entire life by, coaches, yes, but not people. Are there any coaches here tonight? Now, I feel more of what I felt in the first place. And guess what? I shut down even more, which, oh, that's weird. She already felt rejected. What am I doing? I'm avoiding. Does she feel less rejected? She feels, ah. And if you don't succeed at first, what do? Try. Yeah, she escalated at first, but woohoo. That next one is like, what is happening? Doors are slamming. Things are falling off walls. And that is the cycle that spirals out of control, that disconnects people, that ends relationships, causes divorce, broken peer-to-peer relationships, anything. It's just 100%. This is that conflict dance. This is what goes wrong when relationships break down. Nothing else. And it's all because of how we react. The third one is if we dishonor. And by the way, we can do all four of these. I can shut down, then start screaming. You could argue that screaming and shutting down is already dishonoring. But there's also an element of like name calling. I hate you. You're stupid. Whatever, you know. Oh, am I in your way? Dishonor. And then the fourth one is the trickiest and the most destructive. And I'm not going to spell it all out. Negative beliefs. Who? Yeah, you really want to kill it? Negative belief each other to death. And negative belief is just that. She doesn't love me. That kid is worthless. Or that kid is never going to get it. Or that kid's just a jerk. That's a negative belief. And what happens with negative beliefs is we start having confirmation bias. So now whatever I believe, I'm trying to prove out in the world. So I will unfairly judge you just so I can prove that this negative belief I have so strongly about you is accurate. So you might try to do something really nice. What's your name? Jenny. Who? I had a speech impediment for the majority of my life. There are way too many vowels and consonants. J, right? If we're family and I'm negative beliefing her to death, okay? If I think, like, let's say she's my little sister, and I just think she could care less about me. So we're supposed to meet for lunch, and you show up late. What am I thinking? Typical Jay, could care less. No, I'm totally unimportant to her. And I'm going to judge and convict her before she says a thing. And what's sad is most times, that's not even true. I mean, come on. Do you know how messed up you have to be if you genuinely hate someone? Like, that's not normal. Okay, that's just never going to be true. And so the truth is, she had a flat tire, ran out of gas. I mean, something else happened, but because my negative beliefs are so out of control, I make it even worse. Does that make sense? And so these are the four things. There ain't 500 reasons why people break up in relationships of any kind. It's four. And all four of those are on how we escalate, or I'm sorry, on how we react. And so what's really important in your job with these kids, I know I got to stop, I'm so sorry, I'm like overtime, I think. Am I close? 1 minute. Here's the kid specialist part. What's important and what I learned 23 years ago is that I cannot keep avoiding when I get my feelings hurt. I gotta stay engaged in a loving, healthy way. So we have a program called the Marriage Intensive, and it's something we invented in the late 90s. And it's a marriage education program, not counseling. And it's where couples from all over the country have 8 locations in South Africa for 2 and 3 days in a row, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Traditional marital therapy is about 30% successful in couples staying together. The intensive program, we did an 8-year longitudinal study. It was 87% successful. That's important because guess what we do? Within the first hour and a half, this gets identified. And then the rest of the time is teaching people how to react differently. Because if you can change your reaction, that dance is broken, even if just one of you. So as a kid specialist, you have a tremendous amount of control and influence on this dance. Because, man, the kid can escalate out of control. And it's going to push buttons in you. But you could choose not to avoid or not to escalate with them. You could choose unconditional love. You could choose a timeout. You could choose kindness, patience. Look at all those virtues. You could choose personal responsibility. And when you do that, it breaks the cycle. I mean, that it can't be a cycle anymore. It doesn't mean the kid's going to stop screaming. It's a pretty darn good chance that they will. Because you haven't engaged in their dysfunction. And you're modeling, which is the greatest way to teach a kid, is to show them how to live, not necessarily tell them. Cool? All right. Well, Doug, do you want to come? Oh, and I am going to still give these things away. I'm saving these for you, though, if you're going to take them. I've tried to shame you multiple times. This one, and you can get all these resources, and you can ask my son any question, because he's awkward, and he'll answer it. Who's been, okay, your hand was up. You get it. I was going to say, no, I won't do that. And then that's our marriage book, Reignite Your Marriage in 2 Days. Yeah, now you're just, you know what, though? You were very verbal the whole time. Verbal, like you were engaged. Who votes that she should get it? All right, fine. So this, by the way, for even with especially junior high, senior high, this is a 52-week devotional exclusively on the words of Christ. But what's super cool about it is we did this in a way that makes it hyper-conversational. So all you have to do is invite someone to coffee, hang out. You read the statement from Christ. There's a little special insight. And then you just talk through these questions over that verse. And so it's super cool. Who is the most bored and wishes they didn't have to be here? You got to be more like aggressive. I want to see, like, I really hate this thing right now. All right, you win. Even though you put that hand up very shy. Yes, and I'll sign that for you too. Not yours, but his. All right, everybody, thank you so much.
Oh, that was awesome. And I bet in the first 10 minutes you didn't think it was going to be, did you? Hey, man, the gift of ending well is great. You know, something Michael said really stuck with me, and that was this. When we give up on a kid, we lose. And y'all have been in this a long time. You know, sometimes this is really hard. And sometimes you come up against some kids that are dealing with some very tough things. Don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. Don't let them push the buttons in you. Stop that cycle. Love them, and love them the way the Lord did. I love that. Thank you. Dr. Michael Smalley, where is he gone? He's already gone. He's out there. So. He does have resources out here. I encourage you to stop by and check those out on your way. Now, here's the deal. This break involves food. Snacks, okay? The snacks that are for you, preschool children or students, is in your area. So don't raid the adult snacks on the first floor, okay? So I'm going to give you some directions on how you need to go to where you're going. Get there, and then you'll find the snacks that are there when waiting for you when you get there, okay? Preschool, you all are going to go right out here down this hallway and either use the elevator or the stairs that are right here to go up to the second floor to the rehearsal hall, okay? Children's ministry, you all are going to go out, go through the main foyer, past the preschool suite, all the way down to the south tower. And there's stairs and elevators down there to go to the third floor, okay? Children's ministry, you're going to go all the way down to the south tower. Wait, hang on. Wait, don't. You're not excused yet. Man, like a bunch of people that work with kids. Okay. Student ministry, you guys are going to go all the way down by the cafe and use the stairs and the elevator there to go to the third floor, okay? Everybody knows the way they're going? And when you get there, there'll be snacks waiting for you. Have a great night. We're so glad you're here, and I'll see you at 11:25.